Episode 41 of the SF Signal podcast, where we talk about the 99-cent ebook. This is the SF Signal podcast, as powered by the Functional Nerds, and both of us are here for a change. Woohoo! My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And tonight I'm joined by some folks who have done some stuff for SF Signal in the past and hopefully will do so in the future. Let's start off with my partner in crime, Mr. John Anilio. Hi, John.
Hey, Patrick. It's John Anilio here. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy. You can get a lot of my songs for free over at johnanilio.bandcamp.com. I also do a video blog for wired.com called Geek Dad Guitar Lessons, and it's nice to be back. It's been a long time since I've been on the show. I've had a busy, taxing life lately, and something had to give, and it was unfortunately the SF Signal podcast, but I'm here tonight.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate that. Second up, I'm going to say hello to the Center Square, Mr. Jeff Patterson.
I have actually given up everything else in my life just to do the podcast, so I'm kind of the opposite of John. Jeff Patterson, I blog at Gravity Lens at Bad Day Studio, and I actually put something up on SF Signal this past week.
Awesome. Good for you. Next up, we have the newly minted published author, Lisa Pates Spindler.
Hello there. You can find me at lisapatespindler.com, where I run the Danger Gal blog, and SF Signal is an integral, fundamental part of my life every day.
When's your next book coming out?
Soon, I hope.
Can't you enjoy the first one? Come on, man.
No, I got it. Didn't you see that whole thing between the guy from Lost and the guy George R. R. Martin? There's like a there's like a flame war going on that George R. R. Martin doesn't really know about.
Yeah.
Anyway, last but certainly not least, Mr. Fred Kish.
Hi, this is Fred Kish from The Lensman's Children, and my only noteworthy accomplishment lately was to finally get somebody to sign a contract I've been negotiating with them since 2008.
Wow, I didn't know you were part of the whole get the Republicans and Democrats to talk to each other thing.
Oh, I think that would have been easier than this company.
So, having broken my own rule about politics, let's just move on. So tonight,
barbecue.
Tonight we're here to talk about the 99-cent ebook. The interweb is a buzz with talk of the 99-cent ebook these days. Lots of stuff going on there. So I'm here to ask you guys tonight: is the 99-cent price point for ebooks too low? Should there be tiered pricing for, you know, short stories, novellas, and full length novels? And is the prediction that the 99-cent ebook it's going to become the norm in less than 5 years way off the mark? And last but certainly not least, is there a sweet spot? So let's go, Jeff, why don't you go first?
Okay, well, I've probably got the least knowledge on this.
But that's why I picked you.
In the research that I've done in the past couple of days, a couple of things come to mind. Number one, as a diehard libertarian, I think you should be able to charge whatever the hell you want. Unfortunately, the publishing reality is not libertarian. So, when reading the Bucknell piece on it about his experiment doing it, one of the things that I thought really popped up was the whole idea of reserving the 99-cent price point for back catalog and older books, which I think is probably how it's going to play out in the end. I think a lot of new authors might embrace it and might actually get a lot of traction that way, but for the most part, I think it's kind of unrealistic to think that the number and caliber of writers currently working are going to, you know, accept it. I think what we'll see in the short term is a rash of really awful writers who are willing to put up with that kind of a profit margin.
That's interesting. John?
I have a lot of thoughts on this, actually. I read Tobias Bakel's piece, and I thought it was quite good and brought up a lot of interesting points.
Just so everybody understands what he's talking about, is Tobias did some experimentation, and he put books out at different price points, lowered them, raised them, and just kind of watched that whole thing, how it tracked. And you can find that at tobiasbakel.com, so I suggest you go look that up.
Absolutely. It's an excellent piece. The other thing that I would have everybody who's sort of, if you're listening to this particular episode of the podcast and you are interested in this topic, I would suggest that everyone go out and read Chris Anderson's Free, which Chris Anderson is the head of Wired, but he also wrote The Long Tail, which I think a lot of people are pretty familiar with. And his book after that was called Free, and talking about how giving away your product in a way to sort of, as a business model, you know, the sort of the value in that and how things have changed. And one of the things that made a lot of sense to me, or was kind of eye-opening to me in reading that book, is that there is a world of difference between free and even 1 cent. Once people have to pay anything for something, you're cutting off a huge amount of people that would experiment with your product, whatever it is. But the difference between, say, 99 cents and $1.99 isn't that much. So I thought Tobias's piece really spoke to that quite a bit, that depending on your product and depending on who you are, sort of having different price points and changing your price depending on what your goals are, I think is kind of important, because I think, as he pointed out in the piece, is that, you know, he didn't really sell a whole lot less when he raised it to $4.99 from, I think, what it was, $1.99 or $2.99. So the point is, once people make the thought, you know, or make the decision that I'm going to spend some money on this, you know, a couple dollars either way is not going to make a big difference. So you might as well charge sort of as high as you can, because, you know, people may not really care if it's $4.99. But if you're trying to build an audience and get people to read your book, 99 cents is a sweet spot, or even more, free. But not everybody is necessarily in a position to do that.
Sure.
And I have a little bit of experience in doing this myself. I put my music up on Bandcamp, while not exactly the same, but I think the publishing industry is kind of going through what the music industry went through a couple of years ago.
And John, I have some thoughts about that I want to ask you before you go, before you go down that road.
Okay, do you want to come back to that?
Yeah, I want to come back to that.
Oh, all right, sure. Let's come back to that then.
Lisa.
Well, I think that it makes a really good point about what the price point being, how it relates to what your goal is. If your goal is to win new readers and introduce yourself to people who have no idea who you are and you want them to take a chance on reading you, then giving away something for free makes sense. If you're trying to build on a career and keep writing, and you might have to share the costs of what, you know, whether it's an ebook or a print book, because there are costs involved with both, then giving away for free usually isn't an option. I think that's a really good point.
You know, there are costs involved. And one of the problems that I have with publishers when we kind of talk about this with them is when they, you know, I am a marketing director. I do a lot of marketing. I do a lot of advertising. I do a lot of print stuff. I know that it is hugely less expensive for me to shoot an email marketing piece out than it is for me to go and have something printed and sent out. So when publishers say, oh my gosh, all the work that goes into it, I agree. There's work involved with editing the book, with typesetting the book, with getting it all set up. But then a huge amount of cost is printing that book. And when you take that away, that has to be factored into your pricing on the ebook.
Well, if you're looking for some kind of napkin math, go look at Nathan Bransford's blog. He has a couple posts out that explains the costs breakdown when you're comparing the wholesale pricing model to the agency pricing model. And to go back to the whole, you know, in the libertarian environment, you can charge whatever you want. That's been the case with, if I understand it correctly, with the wholesale pricing model, where the publisher sets a price. It's usually half of what the suggested retail is, but the retailer is free to choose whatever they want, and they're free to take a loss on it, which is what Amazon did on a couple of, you know, recently. Yes. So, and it's that I think the pricing disconnect, not just with 99 cent books, but just the pricing disconnect between print and ebooks, has a lot to do with how costs are spread out between the two pricing models. And unfortunately, that sometimes means that ebooks come out to be about the same as print books, but then that also opens up the case for 99 cent ebooks to come out. I don't think we'd be talking about 99 cent ebooks if we didn't have this breakdown between the two pricing models.
Right. Hey, Jeff. I'm sorry, Fred. I was staring at Jeff's picture, but I was thinking of Fred. That's just weird.
I guess I should be flattered. Well, I could go on and on about DRM and formats and all sorts of things, but on one hand, I think that the 99 cent price structure is unrealistic. On the other hand, I'd ask authors, which would you rather be, published and making money over the long term or totally obscure? If you look at, let's say, Tor, when Robert Jordan was publishing at the height, Robert Jordan was accounting for something like 50% of Tor's money. That meant the rest of the authors, well, a lot of them weren't really making any money at all, but they were being paid because Tor was making money off of Jordan.
Sure. And that model is completely messed up. It's ridiculous.
It's probably the same as in the music industry and
That's the way the music industry.
Hold on.
Yeah, Fred, that's the way the music industry ran for years. You know, one big band, like they used to just sign hundreds and hundreds of bands, and most of them wouldn't make any money. But when they'd have like, you know, a U2 or something, they would pay for all the other bands, essentially. It was sort of risk management or something. I've read a couple books about that. Anyway, continue, Fred.
Right. You've got that in the supermarket industry. You've got, you know, end caps and loss leaders and all sorts of stuff. So, I mean, you know, a lot of the people out there are not going to make any money at all in reality. With the way accounting laws are and tax laws, I mean, they used to be able to stockpile books and keep a backlist, and your mid-list authors, you know, David Gerald or anybody like that, yeah, they'd sell a couple books every year and come out of the warehouse and it would be there. They got rid of that rule, and that meant a lot of mid-list authors lost out. Well, here's something that might bring them back. E-books, charging a low price for older stuff, charging more money for newer stuff. But to be quite honest, I mean, you know, John, you talked about, you know, the difference between $2.99 and $4.99 or whatever, you know, the various price points have been experimented. My price point, my make or break point is paperback. I will not spend more for an ebook than I will for a paperback, even if it's a brand spanking new hardcover. And I absolutely will not pay a lot of money, if anything at all, for one that's burdened with DRM, because I've been screwed on multiple points where I've either lost a book due to format or a publisher yanking it out of the bookshelves and I can't access it anymore when I get a new gadget. So I basically, there's like one publisher that I really buy from now because they offer paperback prices, multiple formats, and no stinking DRM.
So, John, I had this idea in my head that I've kind of been trying to compose into a decent post for SF Signal that kind of talks about the parallels between what the book industry is going through right now and what the music industry has gone through and what, you know, like the movie industry has gone through, because you can see these patterns. You know, it's like the format changes. Now we're kind of going to digital. Oh my God, people are pirating everything. We have to lock down the pirates. And they throw fits and kind of ball their fists up and say, you can't do that. And they immediately want to fight you on the digital platform. And that's where I see publishers doing right now. I see them, you know, railing against this digital platform, not embracing it and saying, you know, essentially, well, we're going to set the prices and we're going to set them, you know, where we want them to be. But really, it's going to end up being like Fred. You know, well, why would I pay $12 for the ebook when I can buy the paperback for $7.99?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I see these parallels with the music industry, because, you know, it's like iTunes comes along. iTunes is like, well, every song's worth 99 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody said, well, we'll let you have the music. It's never going to go anywhere. You're not going to do any better than anybody else. And now they're sitting there looking at this, you know, million-pound monster that is iTunes, where that's where everybody goes to get their music now.
Mm-hmm. Well, the music industry really made its biggest mistakes early on with Napster. You know, I mean, the music industry had an opportunity to make deals was Napster, and they could have really embraced the new technology, and they could have survived or at least changed. I mean, it wouldn't have been like it was, but because they fought it, you know, so strongly and didn't see the writing on the wall, really suffered. I think, you know, the record company suffered. I don't think, you know, musicians suffered so much. I think, you know, I mean, I've said this a million times before, but I think most artists have never made the bulk of their money selling records. Most really successful artists always made their money touring.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, it's really not that much different. The only thing that's really different now is that artists have an opportunity to build their audience without a record company as much. But if you look at who, like, sort of the most successful artists are these days, it's the ones that sort of had that initial backing from a record company to sort of build their name, that are now sort of divorced from the record companies, but now are controlling it on their own, like your Radioheads and your Dave Matthews Band and all those kind of groups that had like a lot of push from the record companies, but now are sort of controlling their own destiny and just sort of, you know, kind of engaging their fans on their own.
That's an excellent turn of phrase there, John, because I've been thinking that there's a tidal wave coming into the publishing industry, and if these publishers don't embrace it and kind of ride the wave, they're going to get blown away. They're just going to get washed away. And what you said, embracing your destiny, is that what you said?
Sure, I don't remember if that's what I said.
It's like I really like that, and then I blanked on it. Yeah. But I think that authors are going to be taking more control over their destiny. Mm-hmm. I can see the publishers having to justify to the authors their existence.
Yeah,
as ebook publishing becomes more and more mainstream, and it becomes easier. You know, there's less divide between the author and the reader than there used to be.
Can I jump in real quick here?
No.
Okay. I will anyway. Thinking back on it, one of the things that really got me turned on to a lot of new authors, the one innovation that occurred that really expanded the number of authors that I got into, was when Barnes & Noble and Borders started popping up, and you could actually take a book off the shelf and go and sit on a comfortable chair and read as much of it as you wanted before you decided whether or not you were going to buy it or not, okay? And I know I talked about the back catalog before, but you know, a lot of people, myself included, who's much more of a reader than a writer, you know, will have some trepidation in picking up new material if the person is an unknown. And going back to something that Lisa said, I think there's a really big divide between nobody knowing who you are and somebody having read at least some of your stuff. I think that kind of is the dividing point as to whether or not someone's going to be willing to pay for it. If you read one story by this person and the book comes out by them, it's like, oh yeah, I like their story. I'm going to buy this. I think most of us have done that. And if they wanted to do something like make a first novel or a short story novelette, whatever, available at a really low price point, taking the drug dealer model of making it the gateway, that would be a completely realistic thing to do. A lot of bands have done that have gone on to do great things.
Well, one other point that I was just thinking as you were talking was about how you could go into a bookstore and sit there and read as much of it as you wanted to. The bookstores at that point were also selling coffee, and they became a gathering place. And what we're building those gathering places online now, and I think once e-readers start to have social media functions in them. So when you're reading a particularly great passage, a great paragraph, or something else that you want to tell all your friends about, right from your e-reader, you can then tweet about it, get on Facebook about it, and go on Goodreads or Library Thing or any of the other book communities. And that's, I think, you're going to get a real word of mouth, people gathering and talking about books in a way that we don't do now.
You know, it's funny you should say that. I remember a couple of years ago, I'm at ReaderCon up near Boston, and the weekend that we were there was also this really big wedding was happening in the same hotel, and all these people had come up from New York and New Jersey, and this woman was going on at length about why is everybody here so antisocial? And I go, well, they're, you know, she goes, they're all sitting around in the lobby reading. And I go, well, reading is an antisocial activity, isn't it? You know, I mean, we've all gathered together because we like being alone and reading. So,
but you want to do it. You want to do it in the room with full of other people doing the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So, we've gone a little bit longer than I intended, but, it's a huge, big topic. Let's get some final thoughts from each of you. Fred, any final thoughts on this?
Well, and I make these final thoughts as a kind of a plea that people that I really respect, like Lou Anders and others that I've had countless conversations with, listen to me. I mean, I've got like 8,000 books, folks. If you look at my account at Library Thing, I've only got about half of them entered at this point. I could stop buying books and never buy another book as long as I live, and I'll never get through them. So I hope that publishers listen to someone like me who buys dozens of books every year and not the occasional reader that they seem to appeal towards. They got to price these things right, affordable. They got to make them easy to use. They got to get rid of DRM. They've got to settle on a format, stop bickering with each other at the cost of us and yanking books and such. I mean, I'll buy e-books. I'll buy paper books. But, you know, let's be real. The economy has been suffering for years. I'm not going to buy a $12.99 e-book, just as I now no longer buy trade paperbacks. I barely buy regular paperbacks. I'm practically only buying hardcovers of authors I like. You know, make it easier for me, not harder.
Fred, I predict that a format war is coming.
Oh, it's been happening for years.
No, not yet. Right now, we've got skirmishes. There's a war coming. There, I mean, it's going to be HD DVD versus Blu-ray here soon.
I mean, you've already seen several victims fall by the side. Believe me, I've got a whole bunch of books in those formats.
Jeff.
Well, I'll be much more excited when the 99-cent magazine format comes out, because this $8 to $15 for a magazine is getting ridiculous.
John?
Well, the final thought that I have is the one that I wanted to kind of make earlier.
No,
it's okay. No, it's fine. It's just that, you know, speaking as not a writer, but as a musical artist and experimenting with giving my music away for free and letting people name their price, the benefits that I've seen from it is twofold. Number one, I think people view what I do as being like, it's kind of, they like that I let them name their price, even if it's free. Like, so that sort of gains trust and people like that. So the people that take it for free, now that I use Bandcamp, to get it for free, you have to sort of join the mailing list. So I've built up a very large email list at this point, which is almost more valuable than the money at this point, to be quite honest with you. And the other end of it is, because you do the name your price thing, some people overpay by a lot. I've had people pay $20 for one song, for whatever reason. I don't know why, and I'm very appreciative of it. But I think, you know, that sort of flexibility is kind of good. And I think it's, I don't know if you can have a one price for all kind of thing, even with the eBooks. You know, you do have to experiment. You have to decide what you want out of it. Do you want to get a bigger audience, or do you have a big enough audience already where you can charge a certain amount? I don't know. I think there's a lot that needs to be worked out. But speaking as someone who's sort of in control of my own thing, I like letting people name their price. It works for me. I feel good about it, and it's helped me build my audience. So there's that.
There's that. Lisa. Mm-hmm.
I think the name your price idea is fascinating, but I also think that because we haven't reached market saturation with e-readers yet, that it's hard to tell what ebooks are going to be priced at when it settles down. But I do think that it's a good point to make that a lot of people aren't going to be willing to pay more for an ebook than a paperback, mm-hmm. unless they're getting something more, like extra content or book trailers or some other interactive part of the book. And I think that also opens up the door for some really interesting content out there.
What's funny is that kind of stuff, when it comes in on DVD, kind of pisses me off. I would rather pay $10 for the DVD and not have all the extra content than have to pay $24.99 for it because it's a double disc.
Well, if it's digital, you could have two price points: one for just the book itself, and another price for all the extra stuff.
Right.
And have two different price points.
My final thoughts are: I think, like I said, there's a format war coming. DRM is bullshit and needs to go away. Because if you're going to DRM stuff, then why can I pick up a paperback that doesn't have DRM in it? You know, it's just stupid. It's a gross, exaggerated response to piracy. You're always going to, if you price things too high, you're always going to have piracy. There's always going to be people who, no matter how you price it, they're gonna pirate the book because they're gonna think, oh, you're too high. $12, oh, that's too high. $15, oh my God, that's too high. You know, there's always going to be piracy. DRM doesn't fix it. All it does is there are people out there who consider it a challenge. So when you put DRM on DVDs, there are, to be honest with you, there are bastards out there who think, oh, okay, they've got DRM on there, I am going to try to break that. Especially if it's from like large companies. There's like this underground and they brag about it. Yeah, they're like, oh, this is how I broke your DRM. Aren't you stupid? So DRM does nothing except, I don't know, placate someone in a suit somewhere in a corporation. It does not help you at all. So format war coming, DRM is stupid. There needs to be tiered pricing. No one should have to pay $12 for a 5,000 word short story. There, I'm done.
Good. Winter is coming.
Winter is coming. Winter is coming, yes. Thanks to everybody for coming on. I appreciate it. Thank you, John, Jeff, Fred, and Lisa. We will see you guys next week. And before we call it a podcast, we do also have Charles A. Tan weighing in on the subject. Charles' website is Bibliophile Stalker, which is charles-tan.blogspot.com. Here's Charles.
Hi, this is Charles Tan. I just want to give my feedback when it comes to ebook pricing. What we should remember when it comes to ebooks is that it's not just plain commodity, but art as well. I think it's erroneous to believe that there's a single price point for all kinds of ebooks. Just that some books cost $6, while others might cost $30. I don't see why ebooks should behave any differently, at least in the sense that it has a wide range of prices. The thing to remember is supply and demand. If you're an author, for example, and only have one book out, if you think you can sell a million copies of it in a year, then by all means, price it at 99 cents. If you expect more modest sales, however, then you might want to price it higher, like $10. The key here is finding a price point and an audience that matches your desired income. For example, if at 99 cents, you have 100 buyers each month, what happens if you try raising the price to $1.99? If you only lose 10% of your customers, then that's more desirable than the previous price point. On the other hand, if you say you lose more than half, then you might want to stick with the original price. Now, every book and every author is a unique situation. I know a publisher, for example, whose $9.99 ebooks are significantly outselling their 99-cent ebooks. Quality and content matters as well, not just the price. One thing, however, that publishers and authors should note is that pricing shouldn't be a replacement for marketing. I mean, sure, selling your book at 99 cents can help spread the word, but it's more optimal when it's accompanied by an actual marketing plan or campaign, rather than relying on the price point alone to influence whether customers will buy your book or not. And this is more important as more and more authors start climbing on the bandwagon of pricing their books at 99 cents. Is 99 cents the future? It could be, but again, it will vary depending on a lot of variables. It could be how many copies you expect to sell, how many titles you have. I mean, for example, if you have a huge backlist, might not be so bad to price all of them at a low price. Other factors include your desired income, what genre you're writing for, whether you're fiction or, fiction or nonfiction, and, you know, the general quality of your work. Similarly, there's no universal sweet spot. I think each authors will have their unique situation and circumstances that's not necessarily replicable by other authors. Some might sell an optimum number of copies at 99 cents, while others at $9.99 or even higher. Thanks.
Now it's your chance to be a part of all of this. You can give us a call on the voicemail line, 720-277-9082. If you don't want to make the phone call, all you have to do is go to sfsignal.com, click on one of the podcast posts like this one, and there's a little flash widget there from Google. Plug your number in, Google will call you, and then you have 3 minutes to tell us what you think. And if you enjoyed this podcast, there's a couple things you can do to help us out. Number one, you can go to iTunes and give us a couple stars, or you can write us a review. That helps us by boosting our exposure on iTunes and then gets us more listeners. You can also help us get more listeners simply by telling people that you enjoy this podcast. You know, link to us from your blogs or your websites, you know, retweet us on Twitter. All that stuff helps, and we do appreciate that. And later on this week, we'll have our interview with E.E. Knight, award-winning novelist and author of the Vampire Earth series and the Age of Dragons series, both of which are available from Rock. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/sfsignal. John D., resident blogger, maintains that feed. If you are looking for me, I'm over at ATFMB, twitter.com/ATFMB, which is all things from my brain. That's it for me on this episode. We'll see you guys on Thursday. Bye.